Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Portland City Council chambers. Just a few things regarding the way we try to facilitate a robust and open democracy here. We're very polite. We don't jeer or make noises in opposition to testimony as it's happening. So would ask that you be respectful of that. I don't ban clapping, but it does take up a lot of time, and a number have signed up to testify. So I'm just going to try to facilitate this as insightfully and in as distilled manner as possible. When you come to testify, Carla will be calling out the names as they appeared on the sign-up, the first three, and then she'll call out the following three, because some of you might be upstairs. So if you hear your name called, please make your way down to the sides here so that we don't have to wait for you. And when you do come up to testify, we're going to have testimony for 2 minutes each. It's normally three, but because of the large number of people that signed up, we usually find that what can be said in 3 minutes can be said even better in two. the last thing is we do not want your address. Do not want your address, just your first and last name, and that there's a clock in the front of that big hunk of wood that will count you down from 2 minutes. So we're really glad that you're here. Today is Thursday, and it is, what is it today? February 4th. 2010, the Portland City Council will come to order. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We have Council Item 189, which is a quick report on the Children's Investment Fund. Carla, can you please read that title?
First, ask if there's any objections to taking it as it is a code. We're moving it up from 3:30 to 2.
Is there anyone that objects? No.
189, approve funding recommendations for after-school mentoring, early childhood, and child abuse prevention and intervention programs made by Children's Levy Allocation Committee.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and members of the council, and I appreciate the audience's indulgence. But we do have a bit of good news we need to take care of first. And that is to approve additional investments by the Children's Levy in some early childhood programs, child abuse programs, after-school mentoring programs. And Lisa Hansel from the staff of the Children's Levy will briefly walk us through what those new investments are, as well as how much we've invested this year alone, some $15 million. Again, thanks to the voters' overwhelming support for the Children's Levy twice now. So Lisa, turn it over to you. Quick presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. My name is Lisa Hansel, and I'm a grant manager for the Portland Children's Levy. I'm here today requesting your approval of the funding allocation recommendations by the Children's Levy Allocation Committee. On January 28th, the Multnomah County Board adopted Resolution 2010-13, accepting the Portland Children's Levy Allocation Plan. They expressed much appreciation for Commissioner Saltzman's vision and leadership, and also for the investments the Children's Levy has made in programs and services for children and families in Portland. Just brief history. The Children's Levy was initially approved by voters in November 2002, and in November 2008, city residents passed Measure 2694, renewing the levy for another 5 years. The levy generates approximately $13 million each year and invests in 5 program areas. Oops, I got ahead of myself there. The 5 program areas are early childhood, after school, mentoring, child abuse prevention, intervention, and our new funding area, foster care. The allocation committee is governed by 5 members, chaired by Commissioner Saltzman. Fellow members are Alyssa Kenny Geyer, the city appointee, Adrian Livingston, county appointee, Ted Wheeler, County Commissioner, and Ron Belt, appointed by the Portland Business Alliance. After extensive planning and community input, the priority areas were set for each of the five funding areas, and across all five program areas, there were priorities set for serving east of 82nd and also culturally specific services. We released the competitive or the request for investments in January 2009, beginning the competitive application process. In response to that process, we received 125 grant applications requesting over $97 million over 3 years, which was approximately 2.6 times the amount available for funding. The allocation committee made funding decisions in public meetings, and in June 2009, the levy awarded more than $36 million over a three-year period for 69 programs in our five funding areas. And this chart shows a breakdown of those investments, roughly a third in the area of early childhood, a third in the area for after school and mentoring, and roughly a third for child abuse prevention, intervention, and foster care. Now moving to the matter at hand today, we had, after the awards were made, each of those awards were made on an up-to basis. After staff negotiated contracts with each of those agencies, there was $363,884 remaining after negotiations. In addition, from the previous levy, there was $836,116 of fund balance that moved then from the past levy to the new period, leaving $1.2 million over 3 years to be allocated. The allocation committee decided that those funds would be allocated to programs that had applied with the January RFI, so of those 125 applications that were previously received. The allocation committee set funding parameters in order to make those allocation awards. They set three priorities, the first being full-service after-school programs. And they prioritized this area because it was the most competitive funding area and the demand for new programming, meaning new programs that had not previously been funded by the children's levy, significantly exceeded the supply of funds available. The second priority was set around both new and culturally specific programs in any of our funding areas. And the new piece was set because the bulk of levy funding went to programs that had previously received funding through the children's levy, even though about 42% of the funds requested were from new programs. The culturally specific piece was set as a priority, just as I had mentioned earlier, that was one of the priorities that was identified in each of the funding requests for investments, and in order to continue that as a priority. And then the third priority or parameter was increasing current contracts, being the contracts that had received funding in June 2009 that were culturally specific programs, and again, in any of the five funding areas. So with those parameters, the allocation committee recommends funding to eight programs, totaling the $1.2 million that's available for allocation. And this chart shows that the majority of those funds, 66%, allocated to after-school programs, 24% to mentoring, 6% to early childhood, and 4% to child abuse prevention intervention. And in the after-school program area, $798,927 is recommended for funding, and those are to four programs: Metropolitan Family Services, which will be offering a Sun School at Harold Oliver; Campfire USA, a Sun School at a site to be determined in the David Douglas School District; Friendly House for after-school services for homeless youth; and Northwest Family Services, offering culturally specific after-school programming for Latino children. In the mentoring program area, recommended funding is $285,073 for two programs, Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization for their African Immigrant Mentoring Program, and also for Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, also a culturally specific mentoring program. In early childhood, the recommendation is for $66,000 for one program, the Latino Network, which is a culturally specific early literacy and kindergarten readiness program. And the final funding recommendation is for the Child Abuse Prevention Intervention Program area, and that is for $50,000 to Catholic Charities that offers a culturally specific program to support the children of women who are victims of domestic violence.
No, it's a vote. Okay.
That's it.
That's it. So we're voting to approve
these investments. Any questions?
Right. I don't hear any council discussion. Has anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I had a sign-up sheet set out late.
So I have a concern about that. I had forgotten that this was an emergency ordinance that we'd be voting on and that it's also a time certain. So I'm wondering, I don't know if anybody would be coming in because I haven't heard any testimony from folks saying that they're upset with these allocations. I'm wondering if we could go ahead with the vote, but then at 3:30 ask if there's anybody here to testify, if necessary, move to reconsider and vote again.
Sure. Happy.
Would that be procedurally okay with you, Mayor?
So you want us to vote and then reconsider?
Well, to ask at 3:30, is anybody come to testify? I hesitate to.
Sure.
Or we could just wait and vote.
We don't expect anybody to be here. But
what I'd rather do is we will pause on 188 and take the vote at 3:30 if there's anyone to testify.
Thank you very much.
So I think we'll be fine. Thank
you. Do you want me to come back at 3:30 or?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. I think it was helpful for you. I'm glad we had this presentation.
Give them a round of applause. Yeah. Good work. All right, so Carla, if you'd help remind me at 3:30 to go back to 189.
I'll leave it.
So unless there's objection, we will continue item 189 until 3:30. And can you please read the title for item number 188?
Adopt the Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030 to create a new 20-year vision for further integrating bicycling into daily life in Portland.
So I'm going to make a few opening remarks, and then we'll, why don't Sue and Ellen and Roger go ahead and come up to the table. As Transportation Commissioner, I always consider Portland's transportation system to be in service to larger city goals like education, prosperity, sustainability, human health, and well-being. And while bikes are not the total answer, they are a very important piece of achieving those goals. Since the first bicycle master plan was adopted in 1996, bicycling has become part of Portland's fabric, part of our identity. Ridership has grown exponentially. Businesses are lining up for bike corrals. People tell us they moved here because they can ride their bike to work and their kids can walk and ride their bikes to school. Today, we take the next steps by focusing first on bike boulevards. We make it easier and safer for all types of people to experience their neighborhood by bike. We build what we can afford now. We've prioritized our efforts as part of this project, and with something to pitch, we can gather more support and more resources for the more difficult and more expensive projects to come. We position Portland to be ready for future state and federal funding opportunities by approving this plan. Now, there has been some commentary that we can't afford to do this. I believe we can't afford not to do this. As manager of our multi-billion dollar transportation system, during a time of declining funding, it's my job to offer to the City Council efficient use of what we already have. The most effective way to do that is to shift trips from driving alone to walking, bicycling, and transit. Not necessarily all trips, but more trips. Dollar for dollar, investing in bike infrastructure makes economic sense. For less than 2% of our transportation budget in 1996, we have seen bicycle use grow from 1% of all trips to 6% of commuter trips in the city. That's a good return on our investment. Yes, some of the plan's elements are expensive, but the benefits extend far beyond bicycling. For example, the Gibbs Street Pedestrian Bridge, $11 million already funded, provides critical neighborhood and pedestrian access between Southwest Portland Hills and the Willamette River. Bike boulevards cost about $250 per mile. Much of that expense is for signals and diverters. One traffic signal, let's say, across 39th Avenue can cost anywhere from $250,000 to $300,000, but it is those signals that make the difference on bike boulevards being used by people other than the most avid and agile cyclists. Swales and raised traffic diverters cost more than paint, but they don't just get neighborhood streets calmer and safer for people who live and travel there. They also filter runoff, lower Portland's stormwater treatment costs. Some of the other bigger ticket items, the proposed North Portland Greenway at $35.6 million for 10 miles of trail and Sullivan's Gulch at $28 million for 7.6 miles of trails, will be multi-use paths that are even more expensive and further out in the distance. But when they are completed, they will provide safe places to walk and bike for North and Northeast Portland residents, including kids and senior citizens. These are the type of assets that neighborhoods around the country are clamoring for, and it's good for the central part of our city. It's good for North, Northeast, East, and Southwest. The Outer Cully Cycle Track, the $5.3 million project is already funded, and it provides safety and separation for all users in a section of the city that has seen far too many tragedies on the streets. Finally, this is not a plan that will sit on the shelf and gather dust. We're taking action to ensure it gets built. The resolution establishes a finance task force to look under every rock to make sure that the nine-month deadline to report back to council on how to get it done is met. It requires benchmarking and progress report back to council in a year, and it will incorporate the plan into the transportation system plans. As I said in my forward to the plan, Portland will be a cleaner and healthier city. It will attract more tourists and businesses because we will spend less on cars. More of our money will stay in Portland's household pockets and help support our local economy, and it will allow for affordable and safe transportation options for all Portlanders. With that, I present Sue Keel, Director of the Bureau of Transportation.
Thank you. As Sam has said, we're here today to ask you to approve the 2030 Bicycle Master Plan. It's a 20-year plan and aspirational in nature. I'd like to begin first by thanking our partners in this, the steering committee. These organizations have spent a good deal of time working with us on this. The technical advisory committee, all the advocacy organizations, the neighborhood and business committees and groups on this, the planning, I'm going to have to put my glasses on. The print's a little too small for me on that, so I don't miss anyone. Individual Portland residents that wanted to participate in this, and the Planning Bureau and you all in that process. This plan, I'd like to provide a little context. It's not the only plan we have, for one thing. A couple of good examples would be the Freight Master Plan and the recent Streetcar Plan. But it is an aspirational plan in nature, and it actually reminds me of what we did in recycling. When we first started out, we set some pretty aggressive goals, and we adjusted those over time, and we weren't clear on the funding for those. I'd class this as much of that kind of a plan.
And we got it done.
Yeah. But, you know, if you don't know where you're going, any road will do. And so aiming high will allow us to achieve a great deal more than if we didn't focus. The early phases of the plan focus on increasing ridership and reducing the conflicts between motorists and cyclists. That's just practical stuff. When Sam and I were out in all those neighborhood meetings, when we were working on Safe, Sound, and Green, we talked to as many motorists who were scared spitless about hitting a cyclist as we do cyclists being concerned about being hit by a motorist. So the bicycle boulevard is a low-cost manner to help with that very problem. It puts the cyclists who are less assertive than some of the young males who are the hot rodders in cycling in a safe environment. It increases the opportunity for people who are a little less comfortable because of the safety component into an environment where they are willing to try that. And on the other end of that equation, it means that if that were a trip that would be taken by car, it's one less car that's on a heavily used roadway. So, good
so
deal.
Even, so even if you never plan ever to get on a bike, this is something that a motorist exclusive user of our roadways should support.
I think so. I think so because it reduces that conflict, and it's not a huge kind of improvement. It's taking a road that is already low traffic. Those crossing signals are not cheap, but it's the only way that we will be able to put cyclists who are the ones that are kind of tentative about this in an environment where they will make that trip, and it doesn't necessarily have to be to work. So, okay. So there you got my philosophy on the subject. There are a few things I want to tell you about that are in the plan before I turn it over to Roger and Ellen. The first step will be to amend the transportation system plan with the policies, street classifications, and projects recommended in the bicycle plan. At the same time, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability will be using the bicycle plan to inform the development of the Portland plan and the Central Portland plan. You may have heard the news that not everything in this plan is funded. That would be safe to say. A second key step that you mentioned is this finance work group to ensure a sound funding strategy and to look at it from different perspectives than just city funding or state funding or federal funding. This group will have some new eyes in it, and we hope to turn up some additional ways to provide the funding for this. The Finance Task Force will review the existing resources and allocations, looking for ways to leverage these to implement plan elements, and they will also identify potential funding opportunities and come back to Council with a report 9 months from now. Implementation of the plan doesn't have to wait. We are actually beginning the work on this plan already, thanks to our partners and the funds that Council has already made available for bicycle transportation projects. There are a number of the elements, as you heard mentioned, are already in process. Several of our partners are here today, and I want to tell you about a few of the successes we've achieved together. This year, we're building 15 new miles of bicycle boulevards, and we have more to come next year and the year after. This year, we're planning to hold 5 Sunday Parkway projects, giving Portland residents the chance to connect in their own neighborhoods, including this year, for the first time, East Portland. And this year, we have 72 schools that are receiving safe routes to school services. In October of 2009, Council adopted the community policing agreement that will help target enforcement to behavior of both cyclists and motorists that is a real safety concern. This is everybody's business. And in 2009, in partnership with TriMet, we improved the bicycle connection through the Rose Quarter Transit Center, eliminating out-of-direction travel and improving the connection between the East Bank Esplanade and Points North. So now I'd like to turn it over to the folks who are primarily responsible for this plan, Ellen Vanderslice and Roger Geller.
Thank you, Sue.
Good afternoon. I'm Ellen Vanderslice. I'm the project manager for this plan. And I'm going to talk about the basic approach, which can be described as two assumptions. The first premise is that it's desirable to attract Portland residents to bicycle, especially those choosing now to drive for short trips.
In a few minutes, Roger is going to tell you some of the benefits of getting more people to bicycle. But accepting the first premise, the core of the plan is a second premise, that low-stress bikeways that feel safe and comfortable will attract new riders. What do we mean by low-stress bikeways? These are facilities where bicyclists can expect to feel safer and more comfortable because the stress of negotiating with motorists for space in the right-of-way has been reduced through the choice of the road or eliminated by design. And one example of that is bicycle boulevards. I guess we're back. We can see it again. Okay, bike boulevards. And as we heard from our trail advocates during the public comment period, trails are another very important part of the low-stress network and can really act as the backbone of that system. And even on busy main streets, we can create places for bicycling that provide a low-stress experience. We've learned a lot from the world's best bicycling cities, where close to 40% of all trips are made by bicycle, and people of all ages ride bicycles as a normal way to move around. The bike lanes we've implemented under the 1996 plan, along with the encouragement programs we've developed, have attracted more people to bicycle in Portland than any U.S. city, I think we could say. But we know that bicycle transportation is never going to be for everyone. We believe, though, that we have about 50 to 60% of Portlanders, the target market that we call the interested but concerned, who could be attracted to make some of their daily trips by bike if we create the right bicycling environment.
Before you move on from that, I'd just like to comment in the 33% not able or not interested. I think there's a subcategory of that who are very passionate about wanting to have safe bicycle facilities but just don't personally want to bike. So that it's important to recognize that there is a contingent of people who will never get on a bicycle but who are passionately supportive of bicycle facilities.
Thank you. Yes. In the introduction to the plan, the steering committee articulates a clear vision for Portland in 2030. The main points of the vision are summed up in this slide: a world-class bicycling, a clean, thriving city, bicycling as a pillar of our transportation system, and more than a quarter of all trips made by bicycle. So, what will it take on the ground to attract more people to bicycle more often? We believe it will take a connected, cohesive, fine-grained network of low-stress bikeways that let people feel comfortable as they ride and get them directly to wherever they want to go. And by fine-grained, we mean a network where most Portland residents are within a quarter mile of a low-stress bikeway. Here you can compare what we have today on the left map with the new plan network on the right. The plan proposes several changes to existing policies in Portland's comprehensive plan aimed at fostering the implementation of attractive conditions for bicycling. At the center of these changes is a recommendation for a new policy for bicycle transportation that directs us to create conditions to make bicycling more attractive than driving for trips of 3 miles or less. That's a policy affirmation of preference. More than half of all trips in Portland are less than 3 miles. It's very bikeable distance in many parts of town. The plan recommends a new hierarchy of bicycle classifications for the transportation system plan, and this map shows how a proposed new bicycle classification, major city bikeways, shown in bold, creates a trunk and feeder system with our city bikeways. The major city bikeways provide primary connections to major destinations and may provide for greater bicycle volumes. They can be boulevards, trails, bikeways on main streets. And also shown here are the four proposed bicycle districts, where all streets should function well for people on bicycles. Providing a good network of comfortable bikeways is key, but there's more to attracting people to ride. The plan lays out strategies for meeting the growing demand for secure, attractive bike parking that doesn't clutter sidewalks, as well as other end-of-trip facilities and seamless integration with transit. It includes many action items for growing the successful programs that encourage and support bicycling, as well as for education and enforcement that will reinforce safe behavior for all roadway users, as we mentioned earlier. Acting on the advice of our working group on health, equity, and bicycling, the plan looks carefully at how to make the benefits of bicycling available to all Portlanders. We commissioned Portland State University to analyze the equity gap for bicycling in Portland. The analysis examined how the lack of bikeways affects people in poverty, people of color, the old and the young, with respect to where they live, work, learn, play, and access critical services. On this map from the equity gap report, the darkest color represents the census blocks that rank highest in these combined indicators of disadvantage. And here, those high-ranking blocks that are outlined in green, that the high-ranking blocks that also lack low-stress bikeways. We're using this information in the criteria for project selection, and with this methodology, we can update the analysis every couple of years as we build out the low-stress network. The ambitious plan for network expansion is roughly divided into two implementation strategies. The 80% strategy is so-called because when it's complete, 80% of Portland residents will live within a quarter mile of a low-stress bikeway. The world-class strategy puts world-class bikeways on the busy streets of Portland and establishes bicycling as an essential element of the urban streetscape. These two strategies are not necessarily sequential. We can implement elements of either as funding becomes available. But immediately, in the next 5 years, we'll start with the smart, cost-effective benefits that leverage existing streets, building bicycle boulevards with the funding we have available. The public process for developing this plan included participation from hundreds of Portland residents. Throughout the process, we've sorted through advice from many groups and many individuals, and we've responded with changes to the plan that accommodate the preference of the people who know their neighborhoods best. And we hope that we have represented the collective wisdom of our community. And now I'm turning it over to Roger.
Hi. I'm Roger Geller, Portland's bike coordinator. I'm going to speak a bit about why bikes. The benefits of bicycling are quantifiable and becoming increasingly more so. We can measure how bicycling benefits individuals, neighborhoods, regions, economies, countries, and the earth. Now, by virtue of who you are and where you sit and where you live, you already know more about these issues than most people in the U.S. So I'm just going to present some information that I find particularly noteworthy about why bikes. It's the quantifiable and qualitative benefits of bicycling that underlay this assumption. It is because of these benefits that it is desirable to attract more transportation trips for bicycling, for it's not about the bicycle. It's about how a city built with bicycling as one pillar of its transportation system benefits. Bicycling in Portland is 4 times safer today than it was in 1996 when we adopted the city's first bicycle plan. This saves lives and prevents injuries. We know from several sources that bicycle use is rising rapidly. At the same time, reported crashes have held steady in Portland. Because of that, we're confident in stating that our crash rate is declining precipitously. The same phenomenon has been studied academically and has been shown in cities around the world. Inactivity and poor diet together are the second leading modifiable factor associated with
death. Who's that poor soul?
That's me 20 years ago.
No.
You said bike's good for
you. Living really? Proof. No. Or it could be me this evening. I'm not sure. But inactivity and diet, second leading modifiable factor leading to death right behind tobacco. Creating more opportunities for people to be active in their daily lives is a first target for improved public health. And the Federal Centers for Disease Control states that replacing automobile trips with bicycling and walking is that first target for increased physical activity because of the measurable health benefits offered by bicycling and walking. Speaking of quantifiable health benefits, these people all share something in common. They are likely saving the equivalent of $1 in healthcare costs for every mile they travel by bicycle. For example, in Denmark, where they closely track both bicycle use and healthcare costs, Copenhagen, a city not unlike Portland, saves $1 for each mile bicycled, $1 per mile bicycled. Odense, Denmark's national bicycle demonstration city, measured a 200% return for every dollar invested in their bicycle systems in healthcare savings. This is the percentage of North Americans who live within 300 to 500 meters, about 4 to 6 Portland blocks, of a busy street. Because of where they live, their exposure to automobile exhaust is elevated. A recent study found that they are at measurably greater risk for increased respiratory illnesses and likely at greater risk for a whole host of illnesses than is a person who does not live this close to a busy street. This study was released in January by the Health Effects Institute, which was founded in 1980. It's funded 50-50 by the Environmental Protection Agency and the worldwide motor vehicle industry. Because of this, its findings are generally considered to be balanced and impartial. Motor vehicle exhaust is also responsible for 40% of the county's greenhouse gas emissions. Because of this, the Joint County-City Climate Action Plan calls for 25% of county-wide commute trips to be completed by bicycle. Because bicycling is less expensive than driving, people who switch from driving for most of their transportation to bicycling, even occasionally, have more money to spend. Given this, it's not surprising that we have bicycle corrals in commercial districts throughout Portland. People on bicycles make good customers, perhaps in part because they have the money to spend locally that they're not spending on transportation. According to a report by Brookings Institute economist Joe Courtwright, because residents of the entire Portland region drive less than the national average, $800 million that would have otherwise gone to oil-producing nations and car-producing locales instead annually stays and circulates in our regional economy. The less we drive, the fewer of these very, very, very expensive transportation projects will need to be built. In other words, bicycling is good for our scarce transportation resources. By way of example, for $60 million, we did construct, 300 miles of North America's best urban bikeway network, or we can construct approximately 1 mile of urban freeway. This is why our city's award-winning city traffic engineer is excited about making bicycling a pillar of our transportation system. If we can make it work, and this plan gives us the tools we need to do so, bicycling is the most efficient way to meet a significant portion of our city's demand for mobility, and in doing so, it also preserves the carrying capacity of our existing built-out roadway network and allows us to focus our motor vehicle efforts on where the roads are essential for transit and freight. Building this plan will directly improve the health of Portlanders and reduce our and our employers' healthcare costs. It will indirectly improve our health and that of the Earth's by reducing automobile emissions. It'll keep more of our money in Portland, and it will preserve the carrying capacity of our existing roadways far into the future, and perhaps for as long as Portland is Portland. If we can make it work, we will realize all these measurable benefits. And I haven't even talked about how much fun we'll have doing it. Yeah. With this plan, we can make it work. This plan builds on years of work going back to the early 1970s, when Oregon passed the country's first bicycle and pedestrian funding legislation. It follows in the tradition that has made Portland the envy of cities across the country and a must-stop tourist destination for the world. This plan is thorough and flexible. It contains all the tools for implementing the plan in a modest manner or implementing it in a bold manner. It will allow us to go as far as Portlanders wish to go, given funding and public will. This plan, if built, will not only make Portland one of the world's premier cycling cities, but in so doing, will help make us one of the world's premier cities, period. Thank you. This concludes our staff presentation.
Questions? Questions from council? We'll have time for more later. Thank you for your presentations. For those that have children with you today, we'll prioritize you on the citizen sign-up once we get to that, but we've got a few folks that are invited testimony, first of which is Howard Shapiro from the Planning Commission. Please come forward.
Afternoon. I'm Howard Shapiro, the Vice President of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I have to keep remembering sustainability, but we're part of that plan. I believe I'm speaking to a friendly audience here. I've seen at least two of you in bike shorts, so I think maybe there's a good chance.
I hope
you
weren't going to lunch just after that. Not pretty.
The Planning and Sustainability Commission, as Commissioner Fritz is well aware, gets subsumed in paper on an almost daily basis. But we're very busy these days taking on large gulps of the Portland plan, this ambitious, wonderful goal we all have for a city 30 years, 40 years out from now that all of us plan to be here to enjoy, myself very much included. That said, the Planning and Sustainability Commission took up the question of approving this the 2030 bicycle plan. And one commissioner observed, and I think it's worthy of mention, that this is not a bicycle plan, this is a transportation plan. Because if we put this into play, we change the tenor of everything in the city. So it's very exciting, and we're all unanimously supporting it. On November 10th, the Portland Planning Commissioners voted unanimously to forward the bicycle plan for 2030 to the City Council with a recommendation for approval. The Commission enthusiastically endorses the work of the Bureau of Transportation to analyze the city's network of existing and potential bicycle paths and propose cost-effective ways to promote bicycle transportation in the city, specifically to support the development of bike boulevards, which you've already seen, to develop and implement bike corridors for separated in-road cycle tracks, to recommend the incorporation in the Portland plan of proposed corridors to connect regional and town centers, to consider all Region 2040 town centers as bicycle districts, to recommend space allocation in parking facilities for bikes, and to conduct research on the impact of cycling infrastructure on property values, which I think is a very significant part of this plan. Although Commissioner Smith, whom you'll hear from later, wanted this built tomorrow, a majority of us refrained from the prioritization of funding because we believe there are other projects that are also pending that are worthy of consideration. That said, the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission enthusiastically supports the Portland Bicycle Plan for 2030 as amended by the Bureau of Transportation after the Commission's vote in November. It's probably one of the most significant pieces of the Portland Plan that we are considering in terms of going forward. And we nine citizens, hearing the wonderful collaboration between the city and a very dedicated group of activists, are very moved and very motivated to enthusiastically support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate it very much. So if Mia Burke, co-chair of the Portland Bicycle Plan Steering Committee and also CEO of Alta Planning and Design would come forward, along with Jay Graves, co-chair of the Portland Bicycle Plan Steering Committee, owner of the Bike Gallery, and Lillian Shirley, director of Multnomah County Health, would please come forward. There she is. Ms. Burke.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here today. And on behalf of the Steering Committee, we want to thank the staff of PBOT and all of our partners who worked so hard on this. It's an amazing three-year effort. We have a very large steering committee that was representative of every neighborhood in Portland, as well as business leaders, community leaders, neighborhood leaders, and community groups, as well as the healthcare industry and professionals. And we want to just take 1 minute to have them stand up. All the steering committee members, please, so we can give you our thanks. I've had a hand in maybe several hundred bike plans at this point, so I just want to tell you that this is the country's finest plan. Today you are going to hear from some people who say the plan goes too far, that it's very expensive, and as you pointed out, Mayor, this is, in fact, doesn't commit us to any particular funding, and it starts with some low-cost win-win projects. We have some funding committed already. We have a task force about to work on it, and we have learned that, in fact, this is a very low-cost measure over 20 to 30 years. It pays back in spades. You're also going to hear from people who say it doesn't go far enough, that we should be raising the price of driving very significantly to levels as European cities do, and that we should make it much harder for people to drive by turning streets permanently into car-free zones. I will tell you that this plan does not say that. This is not a plan that is an anti-car plan. It doesn't force people to get out of their cars. It simply will make bicycling more irresistible than it even is today. I do want to tell you that I filter the plan also through a lens of a business person. My company, Alta Planning and Design, is headquartered at the foot of the Morrison Bridge on the east side of Portland. We renovated a 100-year-old building, and it was quite a process. And we have about 30 local employees, and we have tenants, and they have employees, and we have customers, and we have visitors, and we have friends. And we have a bike room for about 50 bikes. We have a cargo bike, a folding bike, a trailer, and two loaner bikes. We are very excited about the new Morrison Bridge bikeway about to open and the streetcar on Grand. That's actually why we bought our building in that location. And we have learned that green transportation is the wave of the future and that we can be successful and contribute to the economy of Portland as well as contribute to the environment. These are not mutually exclusive. The other lens I do is through my affiliation with Portland State University, where we're working to integrate sustainability into curriculum, research, and continuing education through the Initiative for Bicycle and Pedestrian Innovation. And in just the last few years, PSU has proven to be a model itself. It has increased the percentage of students bicycling to Portland State to record numbers through very small, very low investments. And this holds true for my kids' school here in Portland Public Schools, Abernathy and Hosford, where we've increased the percentage of kids bicycling to school thanks to the city's Safe Routes to School efforts. Time and time again, we've shown the strategy of reallocating space from travel lanes and parking and from underutilized land along freeways, rivers, and railroad tracks to green transportation. We've proven that people can and will change their transportation behavior given the right combination of land use and transportation factors, and we've proven that bicycle transportation is a simple win-win solution for our complex environmental congestion, economic health, and livability issues. Today, we ask you to adopt the plan. We will, in fact, not only be adopting a plan for Portland, we're actually raising the bar for the whole country at this point, and my work that I do around the country and internationally as well. They're all looking to us to continue to show the leadership that we've shown so far and to ask you to contribute to continue this path.
Thank you very much. Mr. Graves.
Mayor, commissioners, thank you for the opportunity. And Mayor, thank you for the opening comments. Because of what you said, I can keep my comments much more brief. I speak to you on behalf of business. And sure, the bike master plan, the owner of a bike shop, six bike shops, that makes a lot of sense. But I'm also a business owner that has a delivery vehicle that needs to get around town. I also have many customers who come to my locations via the car. So we need to reduce congestion in this city. We're not going to do it without some radical new moves. We've got 500,000 to 1 million people moving into this area during this 20-year span. So we have to be bold. We have to do something different. I'm also a father. I want to have a safe place for my kids to ride. And to Ellen's slide earlier, there's the enthused and confident, which is the 10%. That's where I'm in currently. But the older I get, I find myself sliding into the interested but concerned. So I'll say it right now, I'm enthused and concerned. And, you know, in my 20s, I was indestructible, and I could ride anywhere, and I didn't mind riding inches away from a car going 40 or 60 miles an hour. Now it bothers me, having bike boulevards, having safe places to ride for myself, my kids, for our community, because in 20 years, there's a lot more people that are going to need to ride bikes to get around. So I enthusiastically, wholeheartedly hope you adopt today's Bicycle Master Plan for 2030 and continue giving Portland that huge return on investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves.
Good afternoon. I'm Lillian Shirley, the Health Department Director for Multnomah County, and which includes the City of Portland. And you have eloquently heard some of the real impacts on human health that this type of visioning can result in our community. I just want to mention why we care deeply. The mission of the health department and all health departments across the country are to assure, promote, and protect the health of its residents. So we're seeing this work as a natural partnership. The bicycle plan helps us promote the health of the community by making sure that we have room and a place and modeling for our children for active, healthy living. And making it safe helps us to protect that community. And there are many aspects of the design in the bicycle plan that we've heard about that really promote that safety. And I have to say, an aside, I'm in that tentative crowd. You know, when we have a bike jam at a light, I make it sure everyone knows I'm Minnie Pearl here, you know, so just go around me. But it does address also the fact that the couple of things that we know about aging is that the best thing to do to assure a long life, and even more importantly than a long life, is the quality of your life. And proven factors are social interaction and activity. And this type of visioning for our community, inclusively to let people join in at their own pace, at their own time, really promotes that and promotes that sense of community across the whole age. I think the other really important thing about the bicycle plan is it really helps us to assure the health of the community. The bicycle plan addresses equity issues by providing a focus on East Portland and reducing the negative impact of social determinants of health on underserved residents, both traditionally and also in our community by both geography as well as socioeconomic status. And that has been carefully crafted. So once again, it promotes a community vision that's inclusive for all of us. And we've heard a lot recently in terms of health care for all. We're discussing it nationally. It's a huge issue. And visions like our bicycle plan here in Portland is one of the most important things that we can do to assure that all can have health care, because it makes it possible for us to have a healthier community. And you're all, by doing this, you're in the demand reduction and really helping to make the cost curve bend so that we have more money for the other kinds of things we want to provide for our children in terms of education and our seniors in terms of quality of life. So thank you very much. We hope to be an ongoing partner in this work.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. The next three before we, and then we will go to public testimony by the sign-up sheets. Angus Duncan, president of the Bonneville Environmental Foundation and chair of the Oregon Global Warming Commission. John Friganese, president of Friganese and Associates. And Jonathan Nicholas, vice president of the ODS Companies, chair of Metro Executive Council for Active Transportation.
Hi. Distinguished panel.
This is a distinguished. Mr. Duncan, why don't you begin?
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, thank you. I'm very pleased to be able to come today and speak in support of the City Council moving forward with what you could either call, I guess, a realistically ambitious or an ambitiously realistic, but in either case, a next stage in Portland's invitation to many more of us to get off our backsides and onto our bikes. I would like to offer a policy comment and a personal one. Mayor Adams was quoted yesterday as saying it would be very difficult to meet the city's 2050 greenhouse gas goal reduction goal without pulling out all the bicycle stops in this plan contains, and I absolutely agree. The greatest risk we face at this point is to do too little and to it do it too slowly. We've done some initial runs of the state's Green Step transmission or transportation emissions model. And it just tells us very simply that without moves as aggressive as this plan, and not just for bicycles, but for pedestrians, for transit, for electric vehicles, for charging infrastructure, for steady improvements in urban design, we don't do all of those things and do them this aggressively. We just don't get there from here. We can't do it. I wrote in an op-ed for the Oregonian late last year that we are at something of a critical inflection point between business as usual and the kinds of changes that could get us to the low-carbon future that we absolutely have to reach. On the one hand, we adopt emissions reduction goals, and that's swell. And then, on the other hand, we propose a transportation plan or a bridge or a laundry list of earmarked transportation projects, and those just enable emissions to continue to trend upward. This plan, I think, points us in some better directions, downward for greenhouse gas emissions and forward for those of us who want to downshift a little bit some of the time, and we need more accessible and safer spaces for doing so. And my personal testimony is that some 30 years ago when I was biking to work here in City Hall, I carried an air horn to defend my sort of 2 feet of shoulder space along the cat. This is one of those air horns that you hit, and it signals the bridge tender a mile away.
So all the bridges went up when you came
down? Yeah, this may well have been illegal. It was very satisfying, but it was a very high-risk strategy for the cars, for me, for everybody. I really think that the city's proposal to create the kind of safe and separated bike and auto spaces that you're pursuing, well, it's an improvement on my strategy. It is really exactly the way to get the sort of less risk tolerant, including myself with the wisdom of advancing age, to get us back up in the saddle, and I applaud it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan. Mr. Friganese.
Thank you. As many of you know, I'm a professional planner, and first I would like to compliment the people that drafted this plan. It's beautifully done, and I think it's one of those plans, should it be adopted, and I hope it is, that will be talked about around the country and around the world for years to come, as I know much of the work that's been done by the city and by your staff has been. And you've heard a lot about advantages of the bike plan, and I want to focus on one that's sometimes overlooked, and that's cost. The bicycle plan, I mean, most of our transportation dollars that are spent are private dollars. I got some numbers. In 1998, there were $805 billion spent in the United States on transportation. 85% of that was private. The public expenditure was $128 billion. The rest of it was people spending money on vehicles, fuel, maintenance, businesses, and so forth. Portland, as you've heard with the Joe Courtwhite study, has lower than average cost. That's good. And when we think about spending $500 million on a bicycle plan, that we tend to think of it as that little wedge that's public expenditure, but we ought to consider it in terms of total expenditure. So I've done some back-of-the-envelope calculations. I'm not a certified economist, so you should have these checked. But the 16,700 bikes that come across the bridge every day, they save about $1,200 a year by not driving a car for that same trip. That adds up to $16.8 million a year. That's a small number of people. That's $336 million over 20 years. Imagine if your bicycle plan is successful and one quarter of trips are done by bicycle. It'll cost $500 million, but how many billions are we going to save from the private side? How much more efficient is our city going to be? How much more money is going to cycle through our economy that would have otherwise gone elsewhere? And I think the debate about expenses on transportation, especially when it comes to bike, which is almost free to operate compared to other expenses, needs to be considered. If you were to spend $500 million expanding the freeways, you get very little done, but you would increase people's expenses. They would drive more, they would spend more. Spending $500 million on bikes is going to decrease people's expenses. It'll make our city not only more livable, but more affordable and more equitable. So I'd urge you to consider that, and I support the plan and hope you both adopt it and build it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Nicholas, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I hope you're not going to feel any need to call security when I say this, but I'm not especially fond of bicycles. Indeed, I'm not here
it's
today.
It's good luck getting out of the room alive. other than that, you're okay.
I think of bicycles the way I think about broccoli. It's really useful for some people, but they're never going to be truly popular. The truth is, I don't worry much about bicycles. What I worry about is our city. And what I worry about most is the people who live here. And that worry prompts in me concern about the key players in our community who care for our citizens. Now, you'll have to all pardon me for mentioning this, but the key players who care for our citizens are not city commissioners. The key players who care for our citizens are those who labor here to create and to sustain the jobs that allow all of us to live in this remarkable place we call home. I'm here today as the representative of one of our city's largest employers to urge you not to miss today's remarkable opportunity. For the plain truth is that we live now in a profoundly sick city. Countless thousands of Portlanders are all but addicted to prescription drugs. One of my new jobs at ODS is to mail $1 million every day to Portlanders to pay for their drugs. And the terrible truth is that the vast majority of the maladies are self-inflicted. Portlanders drink and smoke and overeat, and mostly, of course, we're sedentary. As a culture, we've locked ourselves into a downward spiral of dependence that as a city we simply can't afford. The staggering costs of healthcare among us are doing much more than crippling our pocketbooks. They're stifling our business growth and they're inhibiting our job creation. The solution to all this is not more healthcare, the solution is less healthcare, much less healthcare. There's an emerging civic consensus around a concept called active transportation that's a multi-pronged assault on everything from congestion and climate change to air quality and obesity. Active transportation may sound obtuse to some, but it's really nothing more than an integrated matrix within which people can comfortably do something as old-fashioned as walk and ride using bikes or mike transit to everywhere they work and play. Those of us engaged in this effort are not interested one whit in just a bike lane here or a cycle track there. We're advocating nothing less than the retrofitting of our entire urban environment including taking back sections of our most valuable civic assets, those concrete public rights of way, and repurposing them for a higher and a healthier purpose. All the pieces we think are in place for Portland to lead as a model of the sustainable city for the 21st century, and at a cost far less than any of us 10 years ago might have imagined. The bicycle plan you can adopt today is just one small step in